just in case. Okay, so today what we're going to do is we're going to talk about, based on your vote, actually, we're going to talk about just a number of different halachic inyanim that come up over the course of Pesach. So just halachic ha'aros here and there. There's no common theme between them other than that they all relate to our experience over the next few days. So let's start with this. On Erev Pesach, well, let's start with this, actually. People have chametz mishaps in preparing for Pesach all the time. Rabbanim get calls, many of you are future Rabbanim, you'll get a call. A woman says, please don't judge me, Rabbi. I'm really frum, I promise. But I stirred a chicken soup I was making for Pesach with a chametz tikka spoon. I just wasn't thinking. I opened the drawer in my kitchen. I stirred it with a chametz tikka spoon. So, nu, what's the halacha? So, the halacha is the chametz lefnei Pesach is hetera, and chametz lefnei Pesach is not aser mashu. Chametz lefnei Pesach is batel b'shishim, right? So, if a giant soup, but she stirred it with a chametz tikka spoon, what's the answer? The soup is kosher, right? Just clean off the spoon and put the spoon away, but the soup is kosher. Typically, you'll find that when you tell her the soup is kosher, she'll say, oh no, I threw out the soup, I just want to know if I need to kosher my whole kitchen again, you know, like that's normally where they're coming from, like, no, probably your sink is okay, even though you stirred the soup on the pot with the, you know, the soup on the stove with the chametz tikka spoon, but anyway, so you do have those mishaps that come up every now and then, so it's important to realize that there's a difference if it comes up on Pesach and before Pesach. A lot of people are not aware of that distinction between before Pesach and on Pesach, and that comes up a lot of times with koshering as well. Someone knows that at home I kasher with Haggadah, so if I want to kasher something, I do Irikli Rishon on the counter, and I do this and that, all sorts of Haggadah kashering. And on Pesach, that doesn't work, because on Pesach, Chametz Zasur Mashu, so the only kashering we do on Pesach is Libun Chamur. If you could do a Libun, where you actually burn out all of the any content of Chametz, so you have a barbecue grate or something like that that you're going to do Liban on, so then that would be okay. Or you're going to do a self-clean cycle in an oven, in the old self-clean ovens that got really, 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 really hot, so hot that it breaks most ovens when you do a self-clean. You know, that's a very common shayla, Rabbanim get, not shayla, just like an angry call, Rabbanim get, you told me to self-clean my oven, now my oven broke from the self-cleaning. It's not my problem, they don't know how to manufacture ovens, but they've installed a self-destruct feature on ovens where you just self-clean it and the thing just completely self-destructs. So that kind of kashering could be done in Pesach, but otherwise it cannot be done in Pesach. Also, another common misconception that people have is that they assume that all the dinim of Shloshim Yom Lefnei HaChag and doing Bedikas Chametz, if I leave within 30 days of the Chag, that appear in Shulchan Aruch, they assume that all of those dinim are exactly the same nowadays. They're very much not, because all of those dinim, the whole sugi in the first part of Pesachim, and all of those dinim in Shulchan Aruch are working with the assumption that you didn't do a Mechiras Chametz. But if you do a Mechiras Chametz, so you know you have a lot of Chametz, and it's all going to belong to the guy, right? So just like you have a cabinet in your home where you put all your Chametz in that cabinet, let's assume you sell Chametz Gomor, you put all of that, your Chametz in that cabinet, and you close it off, and that's included in the Mechira, even though you know what's behind that cabinet, you know that there's crackers and cereal and everything else behind that cabinet, but it's included in the Mechira, so it's not your problem, as long as you have something reminding you not to open that cabinet over the course of Pesach. So if a person is leaving a home where they know that they are not going into that home, and they're locking off that home for the entirety of Pesach, they're not going to be anywhere near that home, so even though they're leaving within 30 days of Pesach, technically they don't have a chiyuv bedika on that place if they're going to be selling it. It's just like one giant cabinet. So you don't necessarily have a requirement. Let's say young people living in Washington Heights, and they're going to already tonight, they're moving out into their parents' home, and they're going to be by their parents or the in-laws or whatever for the next 2 weeks or whatever it is, week and a half till yeshiva starts again, till they come back. Strictly speaking, no real requirement that can do a mechira, no real, and they know they're not going to set foot in Washington Heights. No one sets foot in Washington Heights when they don't have to, right? So they're not going to set foot, did I say that? So they're not going to set foot in Washington Heights over the next, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, I apologize. They're not going to set foot in Washington Heights, you know, over the next 2 weeks. So Pashtus is, there's no real requirement to B'dika. Now, Rav Shechter often recommends that you should always clean your house for Pesach, even if you're not planning on being home for Pesach, because oftentimes people think that they're not going to be home on Pesach, but then as life has it, they end up having to be home, meaning they're going on this amazing new program that was advertised in the Jewish newspapers, and it had big names of famous musicians that are going to be on that program, and it's got great rabbis and chief rabbis that are going to be they're going to be on that program, and then they show up. Oh, we forgot to tell you the program's canceled because we're just a bunch of ganavim that steal your money. Every year there's a program that happens like that, or we're renting a house in Orlando and there's a truck coming down with our food, or so we thought. There's not really a truck, there's not really food, and everyone's got to just find a ticket back to New York to get back to their homes. So every year something like that happens. So, or on a smaller level, sometimes a person just a relative died suddenly, so they had to come back for a levaya or something like that. So those things happen over the course of Yom Tov, and because those things happen, Rav Shechter thought it's the proper thing to do is to make sure your house is Pesach ready, even if you're not planning on being in your house over Pesach. Pesach ready means that you put all the chametz away and you put it in a cabinet and mark off the cabinet like you would if you were home. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to kasher everything if you're not going to use any of the kelim. If you have no plan on using any of the kelim, when you get home, you'll cover the counters if you have to come home in the middle of Yom Tov. Yeah.
So if someone tells their whole apartment, they shouldn't do
before? So you can, because you haven't yet sold it, right? But you don't have to. Right, meaning if you did the Mechiras Yud Gimel, so then, right, you probably shouldn't. But if you didn't do Mechiras Yud Gimel, you do a regular Mechiras Yud Dalet, you can. I think the more important requirement that a lot of people don't realize is, while you're apart. So again, my point is that if you live in Bergenfield, and you're going to a hotel for Pesach, but you never know, sort of Shachta says, clean your house, because you may need to come back. If you live in Washington Heights, the chances that and you're a young couple living in an apartment in Washington Heights, and your parents live in Woodmere, and your in-laws live in Bergenfield, we're such a broad community. We have such shidduchim from such diverse backgrounds. So there's no chance you're gonna need to come back to your apartment in Washington Heights. Most of your clothing is there anyway, isn't it? Right? There's no chance you're gonna need to come back to Washington Heights. So I don't think you're really required to do a bedika in that situation. But where you are required to do bedika is where you're going to be for Pesach. You're going to already move in today. Today's Thursday. The first Lel Bedikas Chametz Sunday night. You're going to be eating chametz over the next couple of days. You're going to be there. So and you have a room there. So you have an obligation to bedika with a bracha. So how should the bracha be done? So ideally, the way we do bedika in my house every year is the whole family gathers around. I say the bracha. They answer amen, and then we divide and conquer. This kid does those two rooms. That kid does those two rooms. It's not such a big house between all of us. We each only have to do a couple of rooms, and we get the bedika done. It happens. It's a more efficient way of doing bedika. But then, with that bracha, you do bedika on the room that you're staying in. Yeah.
Like,
if you're there, it's Shas Bedikas Chametz. You got to do Bedikas Chametz. I don't think you have to be there. Again, a lot of people, if that's the case, and you're otherwise not going to do Bedika, so it's a good idea to include in the Shar Mechira of your apartment or whatever that you're leaving out one room that you're keeping for yourself. And then you'll do Bedika in that room that you're keeping for yourself. And don't make it the kitchen. Make it a room that's easier to do Bedika. Make it a second bedroom or something. Okay, so that's in terms of in advance of Pesach. One more thing in advance of Pesach before we move on to Pesach itself. A lot of people don't realize on Erev Pesach after Chatzos, it has a din like Chol HaMoed. So it's asur to do Malacha the same way it's asur to do Malacha in Chol HaMoed. Which there are a few slight differences. I think Malachas Uman is different, Amir Lenachri, certain slight differences, but for the most part, it has a din of Malachas Chol HaMoed, and therefore you're not allowed to shave or get a haircut Erev Pesach after Chatzos. You go most from neighborhoods, you drive by the barbershop, and Erev Pesach after Chatzos, packed. packed with people. That's a real problem, right? Meaning that should not be the case. You're supposed to get your haircut before Chatzos. I know right after Mechiras Chametz, I normally drive because I don't have time to breathe up until then. So Mechiras Chametz finally happens. Shabbos HaGadol is done. Everything is, so now we finally have time to breathe. Drive straight to the barbershop, try to catch it before Chatzos. And usually I see two other rabbis sitting there. You know, it's like the rabbis that are trying to chop last minute before Chatzos to get a haircut before Svira. Okay, so now let's move on to dinim of the Yom Tov itself. Many Sfardim and Chassidim have a minhag to recite Halal with a bracha after the Shemona Esrei on the first and second nights of Pesach. And it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch Simtav Pezayin Se'if Dalid. The Ramah says that many Ashkenazim don't have this minhag. So you would think it would split along Sephardi Ashkenazi lines. However, the Bir Agra and of Soloveitchik felt that it is a totally proper minhag. It's the right thing to do. And Rav Soloveitchik compared it just like we light Ner Chanukah at home, and we also light Ner Chanukah in shul because of the possibility of Pursumei Nisa in a public place like a shul. So too we recite Hallel at the Seder at home and also in shul in order to increase that level of Pursumei Nisa. Rav Moshe in Or Chaim Chelik Beis Simin Sadi Dalid says that if a person is in a shul where they do recite Hallel, even if his personal minhag is that he doesn't like to recite Hallel, or his family practice or the community his family comes from does not recite Hallel, you're not supposed to leave, right? Every, you know, in many shuls there was a change at some point, right? Where, like, I was just talking to someone this morning, told me in the shul that he and I both, you know, that I grew up in, you didn't grow up in that shul, but you're whatever, that they used to have a minhag with the old rav that they didn't say Hallel. Then a new rav came in, about 30 years ago, a new, more, 35 years ago, a new rav came in and he instituted saying Hallel. So the old guard was like, well, we don't do this. And then, you know, so the minhag in the shul now is that they say Hallel and half the place stomps out, you know, in a huff as they say Hallel. So Rav Moshe says that's not proper. If they're saying Hallel, so then you're not allowed to walk out while they say Hallel. That's a violation of Los Eskodu. Rav Shechter pointed out that in the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber quotes Masecha Sofrim, which is authored by the Gaonim, to say Hallel Shalem with a bracha in shul. And the Ramah just says that in Poland the minhag was not to say Hallel. So the Gra and Rav Soloveitchik thought that you should follow the minhag of Masechah Sofrim, not the minhag that the Ramah quotes from Poland. Rav Soloveitchik said, look, it's going to start World War III by introducing a Hallel, and the whole shul is going to fall to pieces, so you don't have to start World War III over it. You know, if like, for example, if let's say you decided, Rav Soloveitchik said we should, you know, it's more proper minhag is to say Hallel, so you walk into Breuer's on the night of first night of Pesach, you give a clap on the bima and you say Rabbausai. You know, we're going to say Hallel now. You'll get murdered. I mean, you don't have to do something like that. So certainly you wouldn't do that. So based on that minhag of saying Hallel in shul, the Gra points out that again, like I mentioned, that the Chazan lights a menorah in shul on Chanukah. It's the same thing because the whole idea is that is to create that sense of Pursumei Nisa. So it's probably the proper thing to do to say it, and certainly the proper thing that if they are saying it, that you should stay as they are saying it.
If someone's minhag is to say it and the shul that isn't saying it,
can you stay and say it? Probably can. Yeah, I don't think, meaning you stay a little later after everyone leaves. I don't think you should be demonstrative about it. Rav Shechter point, yeah? That's what the Sfardim and the Hasidim have a minute to say Hallel with a bracha after Shemona Esrei. What's the common practice nowadays?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. So okay. In my shul, we never did it. So, but I think the common practice, we should. I think I'm changing our minhag this year, actually. But yeah, the common practice is with a bracha. Now, there used to, second point, we're just jumping from one point to another. Rav Shachter often points out there used to be a journal called Gesher, which was meant to be a bridge between science and Torah, and to show the interplay between science and Torah. Rav Shachter said they stopped printing it about 50 years ago, but this is a journal that they used, and there was a Talmud that Rav Shechter had, a Talmud of Rav Shechter, who wrote an article there where he proved that horseradish is none of the vegetables identified in the Mishnah as maror. That the Mishnah identifies five vegetables that are kosher used for maror, and he proved that horseradish was none of them. Rav Shechter believes that that's correct and that's true, and he points out that horseradish is not bitter. In fact, it is sharp. Charifus and merirus are different sensations. And lettuce, while it may not be bitter, and a lot of people wonder, well, wait a second, if lettuce isn't bitter, how can we use it for maror? So you're not the first person to ask that kasha. The Yerushalmi asked that kasha, and the Yerushalmi says that even though it may not taste bitter the way we like to eat it, but if you were to leave it in the ground longer than it should be left in the ground, then it would become very bitter. So today is how to understand that Yerushalmi, right? Is it that the Yerushalmi is telling you, the way the Chazon Ish understood, that you therefore must leave it in the ground until it becomes bitter, and then when it becomes bitter, then you could use it for maror, but if you don't leave it in the ground until it becomes bitter, you cannot use it for maror? Or as Yerushalmi saying, it is a min that had it been left in the ground, it would have become bitter, but it's a min of maror, and therefore you're allowed to use it as a min of maror, even if it's delicious and sweet and it's the same lettuce you would have for salad for lunch every single day, it would still be good enough. Rav Shechter holds, and most poskim hold, not like the Chazon Ish, the second way of understanding, that romaine lettuce is a min of maror. It is the first vegetable, rather, on the list in the Mishnah, so it's the ideal vegetable to use for maror. The Gemara says that the Mishnah lists the vegetables in preference order, so the first one on the list is the most preferred one. Rav Aaron Cutler had a chiddush that he thought that it's not only romaine lettuce, that iceberg lettuce is good enough too. And if iceberg lettuce is also kosher for maror, then maybe iceberg lettuce would be preferred to romaine lettuce, because then you don't have to worry about the bedikas toloim issues that you have with romaine lettuce. Iceberg lettuce is generally much cleaner of toloim. However, Rav Soloveitchik was makvid that it daf could be romaine lettuce. I think most assume it's got to be romaine lettuce and not iceberg lettuce. Jews only started using horseradish when they moved so far north that they had no lettuce available, or none of the vegetables that are kosher for maror available to them. So they started using that. But one second, I'm getting to the halachic point that I just wanted to make, and that is, Rav Shechter often points out that many people have the practice that they'll take some romaine lettuce and they'll put some horseradish on it because I want to be a man. I'm just going to have lettuce. What am I, an 8-year-old girl? I got to show that I'm a tough person. But at the same time, I'm not so tough. I'm not going to have a spoonful of horseradish, so I put a little horseradish to give a little merirus to the lettuce. So there were gedolei olam that did that. Rav Shechter does not like that at all, because Rav Shechter believes that horseradish is not maror, meaning that it's a halacha mufreshes, it's a mishnah mufreshes, that all the minim are mitzarif zeh mzeh. So if you have a half a kazayis of lettuce and a half a kazayis of endives, you're good. You have a kazayis of maror, that's fine. They're mitzarif with each other. But it's also a halacha mufreshes that if you mix your maror with something else, with another item that's not maror, and you eat them together, it's mevatel the tam maror, and you're not yotze in the midst of maror. So if you hold that horseradish is not maror, by putting the horseradish on the lettuce, you're ruining your maror. If you hold that horseradish is maror and lettuce is maror, that they're both minim of maror, so mixing them together is fine, just like you can mix any of the five vegetables with each other. But if you hold that the horseradish is not maror, so then you really have a problem by mixing them together. Question or answer? So by the way, you're not satisfying anything according to the Chazon Ish either, right? I mean, you just like you run into a problem according to Rav Shechter because horseradish is not maror, you run into a problem according to Chazon Ish because lettuce is not maror. Meaning lettuce is only maror if it has merirus, according to the Chazon Ish. Because I'm throwing some horseradish on, so I'm tasting merirus as I'm eating lettuce, that doesn't satisfy the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish would say that it's only mitzarif to the shear if the lettuce itself is already bitter. So by combining the two, people often think they're upgrading. It's probably a downgrade according to both extremes, right? Both according to Rav Shechter Shita and according to the Chazon Ish Shita, it's likely you're not being yotzei the mitzvah by combining the two and having a half a kazayas of each. So pick your Shita and go with it, right? Meaning either have a kazayas of horseradish because you assume horseradish is maror. If you do choose to have a kazayas of horseradish, it's important not to just, you know, buy a jar, you know, gold horseradish and open it up. And even if it's the white one, not the purple one, because the white one is also pickled and it's soaked. And maror that's soaked is not kosher for maror. So you have to have like freshly ground maror. There's an asivus in the Haggadah, the Maisa Nisim Haggadah, where he's nervous that if you have ground maror, that it may be a shahakol niyabidvaro. Because when you grind something and it doesn't have the tzura of the original vegetable, so it may not be a hadam anymore. So you probably shouldn't eat it that way, the Nesivus writes. The Nesivus says, better just take the root and just, you know, chomp on it, you know, like a real man. And that others say, no, that's even worse, because if you do that, it's not really l'achila b'chlal. So how can you say al-achila's mara? That's not called an achila. That's just, you know, some form of torture. It's like, you know, that's not the derech of achila. It's a question whether that's true, that it would become shakol niya bidvaro when you grind it up. Pashtus is not that way, meaning, let's say, what's the bracha on potato kugel? Right. What bracha do you make on potato kugel? So I've heard three answers so far just now. Right? I heard someone said adama, someone said shakal, someone said it depends how big the pieces are. Right? So what's the inyan? The inyan is that if the potato kugel is ground up to the point where, let's say, where it's not recognized as a potato, so then it depends if it's darko b'kach or not. So in two different places in the Mishnah Berurah, one place he says, as long as it's the derech to make potatoes that way, it's still hadama. Another place he says, rov, that if rov potatoes are made that way, then it's hadama. Now, are rov potatoes in the United States put into potato kugel? Rabbi Reisman pointed out that one of the poskim, he wouldn't say who, because he thought it was Lashon Hara, that one of the poskim said that he thinks rov potatoes in the United States are used for potato kugel. I don't know if he's never been to a potato chip factory, but you know, rove potatoes in the United States are not used for potato kugel, obviously. So, but it is darko b'kach. It's not darko b'kach. So, it's Rabbi Reisman said that he went to visit Rav Palm on Yantiv, and Rav Palm invited him to his house for Kiddush, and he served him potato kugel, and he said, what bracha should I make on this? And Rav Palm told him that he should say a shahakol. And he said, at a different time, Rebelsky had to come to do some fundraising in his neighborhood, so he invited Rebelsky back to his house afterwards to get a bite to eat, and he served him potato kugel, and Rabbi Reisman said, he used to grate the potatoes, and he said he didn't have patience to like grate it too finely. He'd like push down as hard as he can so you get like stringy, you know, and Rebelsky still a shakal, even with the stringy one. So, okay, so there's a debate, whether it's hadam or shakal or whatever. So, by the maror, you have a similar debate. That's what the Nesivus says, this chiddush, that it could be that it's a problem to say hadam. And if you're not going to say hadam, then you can't use it for maror. Then it has got to be a vegetable that you say hadam on. Otherwise, what did you accomplish with the karpas? Yeah.
Why should it be hadam anyway? Like, no one eats that any other day of the year.
Eat horseradish all the time, but we would usually prepare it in such a way. Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. Yeah.
If you have a kazayas of
romaine lettuce is mara.
You shouldn't put the horseradish on it.
Probably not, right? Now,
So who are the sources that say that horseradish is okay?
It was Jewish tradition for centuries already. So Rav Shlomo Zalman writes that they showed him this article, and he said, okay, but, you know, your bubby ate horseradish and her bubby ate horseradish. You know, that's how the Jewish people live. Now, speaking about putting things on the maror, that are mevatel tamar, and therefore take away your mitzvah of the maror, charosas is one such thing. The halacha is that you're supposed to dip the maror in charosas. The Gemara says that it's meant to take away the danger of the maror, because otherwise maror is dangerous, and then you shake off the charosas. That the charosas is supposed to be something that's acidic, that could therefore kill any germs or whatever that's on the maror. That's what Zecher the Tapuach Tosos writes, I think, in Maseches Tainis, that Tapuach doesn't mean what it means in modern Hebrew. In modern Hebrew, Tapuach means an apple. Rav Shechter is very fond of pointing out that Tosos writes that Tapuach means a citrus fruit. In the Middle East, they didn't have apples. So it was they didn't have apple trees. They had citrus trees all over the place. So Tapuach would mean some orange juice, some lemon juice, some grapefruit juice, something like that. So that should really be one of the ingredients in the charoses. So when no one's looking, after whoever made the charoses made sweet, delicious charoses with cinnamon and apples and everything else, just take some orange juice and just pour it in when no one's looking. It won't kill it. It will be delicious anyway. But really, it's supposed to have some citrus content in it. But because charoses is so delicious, people tend to, instead of just dipping the maror and shaking it off and then eating the maror, people tend to pile the charoses on the maror and eat it that way. That's mvatal tam maror, and it means that you're not yotzi the mitzvah of maror, and that your bracha of al-chilz maror is a bracha of atala. So it's a pretty bad, right, to do that. Meaning that's a halachic hakbada that one should be mindful of. The question then becomes, you know, why are you such a Grinch? Like, what's wrong with you? Everyone loves charoses, and like, how could you rob people of the opportunity to enjoy their charoses? So I will tell you, I'll give you a good chumrah that Rav Shechter often points out. There is an opinion in Rishonim that there's a mitzvah midrabanan to eat a kezayis of charoses. A separate mitzvah midrabanan to eat a kezayis of charoses. The Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos proves that it must not be a mitzvah because there's no bracha of alachilas charoses. And if it were a mitzvah, then there would be a bracha of alachilas charoses. So it's machlokes tanaim whether charoses is a mitzvah or it's just, you know, for medicinal purposes to kill the worms that are on the marar. But it's machlokes tanaim, and the Rambam says the raya that we paskin that it's not a mitzvah is if it were a mitzvah, there would be a bracha on the mitzvah. Just like you have a bracha on achila of any kezayis of anything. It's interesting, Rav Shechter often points out, and then in Mishnah Torah, he changed his mind, and he says that it is a mitzvah, but he still says there's no bracha. So it's unclear exactly, well, wait a second, in Pirush HaMishnayos, he said, if it's a mitzvah, then there better be a bracha. And yet in the Mishnah Torah, he says, it's a mitzvah, but there's no bracha. So Ayin Eretz HaTzvi, Rav Shechter has a mahalich, that the nature of the mitzvah of charoses is not a mitzvah sachila, it's a mitzvah lios al hashulchan, that it should be there as a symbolic thing, but it's not a maisa achila, and any time there's no maisa, then there's no birchus ha-mitzvah. It's in the kuntres birchus ha-mitzvah, Rav Shechter has in whatever it is, in Gimel, in Eretz HaTzvi, which is, to my mind, the greatest piece he ever wrote. It's awesome. So read it, learn it. It's got a lot of Pesach related in Yanim in that piece in Eretz HaTzvi. So one second. So where's my chumrah that I'm going to give you that will save your charoses experience? So if you're going to assume, like some Rishonim, that there's a mitzvah of achilas charoses that you're supposed to eat a kezayis, Ramesh Feinstein used to be machmir that during his seder, during the Shulchan Aruch, he would have a kezayis of charoses, that was part of his suda, that's part of what he ate, to be machmir a day in Rishonim that we don't really paskin like, but that's what a chumrah is. A chumrah is when you try to be yotzei more shitos in Rishonim. It's not just when you do nonsensical things. It's when you try to be yotzei more shitos in Rishonim. That's the definition of a proper chumrah. So you can still save the charoses, just not when you're eating the maror. You could, during the Shulchan Aruch, you could take another piece of lettuce if you like wrapping in the lettuce, that's fine, but not while you're trying to do the mitzvah of maror. Questions? Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot of charoses recipes are more solid, so when you shake it off, you're not really, at the end of the day, not having anything on the maror.
So yeah, so the Gemara says that it's supposed to be like a cement-like material, not hardened cement, but, you know, like not solid and not liquid. Which I think most of the time it is. So you should really shake. Meaning you shouldn't pile it on and then shake it off. You dip it and then shake it off. So there shouldn't be too much that comes out in the first place.
Isn't the same also applied to
curry? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Now, another just ha'ara. Yeah? To eat charoses during, it probably would be a hefsek, meaning the alachilas matzah, alachilas marah are going on the korich also. So it probably would be a hefsek to just be mafsek by eating other stuff in the middle. So probably you should not have the kesayis charoses, and you do it after at Shulchan Aruch. It's a question whether you should be mafsek by saying Zecher L'Mikdash Kehillel before the korich. So if, I don't know how many of you were at the Shir Klali that the president gave last week. I'm just joking. I know how many of you were there. But at the Shir Klali, anyone tells you why he's not a real yeshiva, tell him come to a Shir Klali. You'll see we run out of there just like any other real yeshiva. So the president said at the Shir Klali that he said I heard from Ori Rabbi Rav Rosenzweig that Rav Soloveitchik was makbid that he would not say Zecher L'Mikdash Kehillel before eating the korech, because he held that it was a hefsek, he would wait till after eating the korech. And Rav Tversky was there, so he turned to Rav Tversky, he said, correct? And Rav Tversky said, nope, not correct. He said, really? So Rav Tversky said, yeah. And so he said, what did he do? So Rav Tversky said, he did what it said in the Haggadah. It says in the Haggadah, he says, Zeichel Mikdash Kilel. It's not so clear that you're even supposed to say Zeichel Mikdash Kilel. Shulchan Aruch says, you have korech, Zeichel Mikdash Kilel. So the question is, does that mean the Shulchan Aruch is describing why we have korech? Or the Shulchan Aruch is telling you what you're supposed to say before the korach. Okay, so the minhag is that we say it. The Mishnah Berurah already quotes Deos among the Achronim, whether you should or shouldn't say it. Is that a hefsik? Pashtus is it's hard to understand why it should be a hefsik. Meaning, there's no pass the salt is not a hefsik after you after you washed for challah on Shabbos, right? Meaning, anything that's me'inyan of the achila that you're doing is not a hefsik. So pashtus is hard to understand why saying zeichel mikdash, which is describing what you're eating, it's describing that. Why should it be a hefsik? But anyway, Rav Tversky Sar Salvechik was mafsik with it. If you look at Nefesh HaRav, Rav Shachter writes no, that you're not supposed to be mafsik. Rav Shachter is very makbid to only say zeichel mikdash kilel after the korech. Rav Willig says it only after the korech. Rav Rosenzweig apparently only after the korech. So I texted the president. I said, in case you felt like Rav Tversky, undid your point. It was Rav Shachter's makbid. He writes in Nefesh HaRav. Rav Willig's makbid. So he said this. So interesting. This must be one of those things where what he said in Shir maybe didn't match what he actually did. I mean, he was saying in Shir, the idea of not being mafsik, but maybe he just did what it said in the Haggadah. In the Haggadah, it's always before. So we do try not to be mafsik with other things. Question: whether Zeichel Mikdash Kilel is a hafsik.
In the Korach, how much?
No, you just dip and shake it off. Yeah. Another point Rav Shachter often likes to make every year is that when you do Haseba, just to put it in English, the way a friend of mine, Rabbi Warren Sinneman, put it, is Haseba means to recline. It does not mean to lean. There's a difference. Leaning is like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. It's just leaning. But it's not leaning on anything. Haseba means to recline. When you're in a recliner, it's not that you have a wooden stool and you're just in the air. That's not reclining. Reclining is that you're reclining on something, right? So when a person does haseba, they should be leaning on something. So if you're leaning to the left, you should move your chair where the back is to your left, so that you're sitting sideways on the chair, and then lean in that direction. Or if you have an armchair, you can lean on that arm with a pillow or something to make it more comfortable, but you should lean on something. You should not just lean in midair. Yeah.
I just went back to the Karpas Sugya and Rav Shachter on parsley, so that's not
because it's not edible. It's not something anyone would eat. Yeah. I think. Yeah, I think he says that. Yeah. Okay, whatever. Every family has their minhag. In my family, we do potatoes for karpas, but that's clearly not what karpas means. Meaning, karpas is not a potato, right? It's some type of vegetable. It's definitely not a potato. But okay, it's not the end of the world to use a potato for karpas. Much more delicious than most of the things that karpas probably is. Okay, now the kosos at the seder require drinking a rov kos, not just a rov revius. A lot of times, people get confused about this. When it comes to saying kiddush, you have to drink a rov revius. When it comes to the seder night, it's not a din in the revius per se. It's a din in the kos. You have a mitzvah of dalet kosos. So you're supposed to drink rov kos. So even if you have a gigantic kos, you're supposed to drink rov of that gigantic kos. And drinking a rov revius would not be enough. And that's why it's a really bad idea to have a gigantic kos. It's a much better idea to get a kos that's around the size of a revius. So that way, when you drink rov of the kos, you're also drinking rov revius, which is what you're required to do. So you get a 3.5 ounce kos, 4 ounces is berevach already a revius. So you're, and they sell kos like this. It's not hard to find. Rabbi Reisman tells a story that when he got engaged, when he got married, his first year married, he went to his in-laws for the Seder, and which is always a jarring experience, like every tune is wrong, and they're doing he went to his in-laws for the Seder, and in the new son-in-law, they were trying to impress him, and they're trying to make him feel very loved, so they gave him like this gigantic silver kos. It was like 9 ounce kos, and his 9-year-old brother-in-law was sitting next to him, his wife's brother. He said his wife only had much younger brothers. All of her siblings close in age were sisters. So when he got married, he never told his wife that there's such a thing called ben azmanim. She didn't know. She didn't have any brothers in yeshiva. So like, you know, he was learning in yeshiva up until like Erev Pesach. And then only when the next sister got married, and she was talking to her sister, and she's like, oh, my husband's been off from yeshiva for a week. What? You know, but so he said he was sitting next to his 8-9-year-old brother-in-law, and the kid had a Yelet Tov kos, you know, like this little, so he just switched it. And the brother-in-law thought he was being so nice to him that he wasn't being nice to him. I wanted the better kos. I wanted the one that's closer to Ravias. Okay, so if you get a kos, that's a 3.5 to 4 ounce kos, that's much better. L'chadchila, you're supposed to really drink the entire kos. It's based on the Gemara in Chulin, in the second paragraph of Chulin, which says that l'chadchila, this is one of those things Rav Shach likes to say a lot also, this Indian about the kos, that the Gemara in Chulin says that l'chadchila, you should shech the entire simen, and b'diavad, rov simen is enough. So if you only, so really the same is true with the kos, that since it's a din in the kos, Rav Shach has a piece in Ginas Egos about l'chadchila midaraisa and b'diavad midaraisa. So over there he talks about shechit on rov simen l'chadchila on a matir versus a mitzvah. It's also a magnificent piece, but it's a similar idea that l'chadchila the din is a din in the kos, so you're supposed to drink kala kos. B'diavad rov kos also works because of rubo kikulo. If you only drink a rov revius each time, let's say you have a small kos and you only drink a rov of that kos, then it's important to note that that has a nafkamina in Hilchos Brachos, that you're not going to say a bracha achrona, the alagathan, at the end, because you didn't drink a revius. So that's why many people who only drink rov kos throughout will drink kala kos on the last one to make sure that the bracha achrona is warranted. Otherwise, it could be a bracha levatala. We're not mitzdarif the drinkings that are so far apart from each other, right? The shir of bracha achrona is a revius, b'kadesh tias revius. You don't have a long window of time to drink that revius. It's the amount of time that it takes to drink a revius. So if you're using a 3.5 ounce kos and you're only drinking 1.8 ounces each time, then there's no need for bracha achrona, even though it's in the Haggadah. Even though the bracha achrona, a lot of times people get nervous, but it's in the Haggadah. How could I not say? Even if it's in the Haggadah, it's in the Haggadah because the Haggadah is working with the assumption that you drank a revius. So no one should get nervous about that they're skipping the Haggadah. You're still Yotzei Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, even if you don't read the bracha mein shalosh. Okay. There are poskim that hold that you could use grape juice. Almost all the contemporary poskim hold it's better to use wine, based on the concept of being yotzei cheirus. That you know, the concept of yayin yotzei de cheirus lo yotza. So wine is assumed to provide more of that sense of cheirus. There are several rishonim that say that grape juice is kosher l'chadchila, based on the Gemara. The Gemara in Psachim Kufches says that you could be yotzei with yayin chadash, with new wine, which means freshly squeezed wine. So if it's freshly squeezed wine, it doesn't have any alcohol content yet. It didn't have time to ferment and to develop the alcohol content, so it's pretty much beferish in the Gemara. What's the counter argument? So the counter argument is no, that Gemara was talking about freshly squeezed grapes that are that can still ferment. The grape juice that we have, that process was aborted, it was already cooked, it was already whatever, and it can no longer ferment and turn to wine. And the longer you leave your grape juice, it's not going to turn to wine, it'll just turn bad. It's not going to develop any alcohol content. So that's why a lot of the posts can think that our grape juice is much worse than the Gemara's grape juice and cannot be used for Kiddush or for Dalet Kosos. Rav Moshe was Mekel. Certainly for Kiddush, Rav Moshe was Mekel. But it's obviously a hider to use wine. Rav Salvechik thought it's proper to be Machmir. Rav Shachter said that Rav Salvechik said, you know, he knows Rav Moshe's Mekel to use grape juice, but the deos that are cholik on Rav Moshe are very, very big names also, Rav Salvechik said, and he thought that it's proper to be Machmir. Now, even Rav Moshe, Rav Shachter told us, even Rav Moshe held that grape juice is not good for Dalet Kosos, and it's really only good for Kiddush, but not for Dalet Kosos, because Dalet Kosos is meant to be like a toast, and no one would make a toast on grape juice. You know, it's like to raise your glass in celebration of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for Klal Yisrael. The Rav held that if you say grape juice works for Kiddush, then it should work for Dalet Kosos as well. Meaning, Rav Moshe was making about grape juice, for Kiddush, but said, nah, don't do it for Dalet Kosos. And that's where Rav David Feinstein in Sagada goes through the minimum alcohol content that you need for your Dalet Kosos for wine, because he thought that Dalet Kosos is different. Dalet Kosos, you need wine. Rav Soloveitchik thought to Paskin, not like Rav Moshe, that you should not use grape juice, but if you hold that grape juice is okay, then it's okay for Dalet Kosos also, right? Then it's not going to make a difference whether it's Kiddush or whether it is Dalet Kosos. So it's always, you know, it's the night of the Seder. It comes up, not that often. Only once a year, twice a year in Chutz La'aretz, you try to do it right if you can handle it at all. So, okay, one second. So, how much is the alcohol content that you actually need your wine to have? Can you mix the wine and the grape juice so that you can lower the alcohol content? So, Belsky held that 3.5% alcohol is good enough, because wine, by its very nature, can't ever be more than 14% alcohol if it's natural wine, unless they add extra alcohol to it. Regular wine will never be more than 14% alcohol. And the Gemara says that they were mosing the wine in a 3-to-1 ratio. So they still considered it wine at 3.5%, right? I mean, because a 3-to-1 ratio, when you start with a 14% alcohol, so if you mix your grape juice in such a way where you end up with 3.5% alcohol, that's still okay. So let's say you have a wine that's 7% alcohol, then you do a 50-50 mix of grape juice and wine, that's okay, because then you have a 3.5% alcohol of wine. Your question? Someone had a question before? Yeah?
Is white wine the same as red wine?
So we'll get that in a second. No, meaning there is the Ramban holds that red wine is ma'akev, that you're not yotze with white wine. We don't paskin that way, but it's a proper hidur to use red wine. Ideally, also the wine shouldn't have any sugar added. Like if the wine starts with the word cream, then that's not not a wine that is royal nasech al gabei mizbeach. That's what the Rambam holds, that the kosher bracha should be roi for the mizbeach. Question is, how roi for the mizbeach? Does that include even that it can't be mavushal, because yain that's mavushal is not roi for the mizbeach? Or does it mean, no, it just has to be the type of wine that's roi for the mizbeach, but mavushal doesn't really matter. A lot of times people try to be makbid to have only eino mavushal, to have only a wine that's not mavushal at the seder, but sometimes that's a terrible mistake, because a lot of people at their seder have people who are not religious, and sometimes even people who are not Jewish. That's also a mistake, probably. You shouldn't have people who are not Jewish at your seder. But when you have people who are not religious at the seder also, so you have issues with yayin she'en and mavushal. So much better to have mavushal wine in those circumstances. But it is a chumrah and a hidur, certainly for Kiddush, even if not for all Dalet Kosos, but for the kosher Kiddush, to have yayin, that, and such an easy chumrah. Normally, if you're hanging around with only from people, right? So it's an easy chumrah. Especially the Jewish community now is so into wine. There's so many wines that are available that are not mavushal, so they're a little more expensive. So Baruch Hashem, our community is so rich nowadays that it used to be no Jew would ever buy a bottle of wine for more than like $9. I mean, that's crazy. But nowadays people spend a lot more than that on wine. So it's not so hard to find non-mavushal wine. It's a lovely chumrah to have. Yeah.
Is it better to like not mix?
Probably you'll be more able to participate. You'll just knock yourself out after. No, but you'll probably be less able to continue to learn Hilchos HaPesach all night until you fall asleep. Probably less able to do that. Rosh Hashanah after the Seder every year opens up a Gemara Pesachim and starts learning from the fifth parak. All the dinim of the Karban Pesach until he falls asleep sometime middle of the seventh parak. Usually, I think he falls asleep at some point. Yeah.
Is there an issue to add grape juice to wine because of the added sugar?
Is there an issue? Well, if the grape juice has added sugar, then that's the same issue. Rav Shechter pointed out that Mr. Herzog, the owner of the winery, came up with a chap, where instead of having outside sugar added, he took natural sugars from other wines, meaning other wines, and took the extracted the sugars from that, dehydrated them, extracted the sugars from that, and adds that into his wine. So he said, I'm just adding wine to the wine. I'm just mixing wine with wine. So that was his chap. I couldn't tell from Rav Shechter whether he thought that that was a good chap or a bad chap. But he just said that was Mr. He said he's a balabas, not even a rav, and that was his chap. So I don't know if he thought it was a good chap or a bad chap. Either way, it's fine. We're talking in the realm of hidurim. We should probably get back to things that are more than just hidurim. Yeah.
Is it better to drink only kos of only wine, or to drink a whole kos of wine and grape juice mixed?
As long as 3.5% alcohol, they might as well be makbid on kala kos. I don't know. By Sephardim, they only say bor piragafen on two of the kosos. We say, Ashkenazim say bor piragafen on all four kosos. We follow the Rambam. The Rambam says that you say even on the second and fourth coast, Sephardim don't follow the Rambam. Sephardim follow the Shitas Bali Atosos. Good trivia question, right? When do we have where Sephardim follow the Bali Atosos and we follow the Rambam? What's the other famous example? Majim and Amajim in their Hanukkah, right? So there must be other cases also, but a good thing to think about just a moment. So it's a good question why the Ashkenazi practice is allowed. Because L'chora, you don't need a new Bar Priyagafen, meaning nothing changed, nothing happened. After benching, you need a new Bar Priyagafen. So Mehechi Tasty, they can say a new Bar Priyagafen. It makes more sense. So the Achronim work on it, so they suggest. Taz writes, I think Rabbi Simon just gave shir on this past Sunday in L'Zechon Nishmas High Arbisfeld. So this is what his shir was about. So the Taz writes that when you say the Bar Priyagafen, you're having in mind that it runs out before the next kos, meaning that you're putting a cap on your bar priyagafen. But if you don't have that in mind, meaning you should have that in mind, or maybe that's the stam das of a person that since he knows he's planning on saying another bar priyagafen, his stam das is that his bar priyagafen should run out that before the next one. But why do we want to do it that way? So that's what a number of the achronim explain, that I think based on Reb Chaim and probably earlier sources, that the bar priyagafen is a birchas hanenin, but it's also oftentimes used as a birchas hashevach. So in the context of giving a chashivus to a mitzvah, it's a birchas hashevach. It's not just a birchas hanenin. And therefore, we can say it even when a birchas hanenin is not required. L'mashal, let's say there's a bris on a fast day. Who's going to drink the wine at a bris on a fast day? Right? So typically, if the mother, my sister made a bris on a fast day, so I remember she came in, she was in Shar Yashuv, and she stood outside the basement. She did not come to the basement. She stood outside the basement, but as soon as they made the barbary oven on the wine, they ran the wine to her, and she took a sip because she was a Yoleda, so she wasn't fasting anyway. But oftentimes, they don't have the mother drink. Who drinks? The baby. Baby's being yotzei with your bracha, but that's what they do. The baby, because really it's a birchas hashevach. That's why the overwhelming minhag is that the Masada Kiddushin doesn't really drink when he says the bar priyagafen under the chuppah. Why not? You're being motzi someone in birchas hanenin that you're not even using for yourself. No, because there's that element of birchas hashevach. So they say Reb Chaim maybe or maybe not spilled a little wine on his fingers and drank from that. Unclear whether he actually did that. Machlokas, I think, between Rav Baruch Ber and the Brisker Dayan, whether Reb Chaim actually did that. I don't know. So, but that's how they justify the practice. There's another problem Rav Shechter points out, which is a great kasha. Whenever you say a bar priyagafen associated with another bracha, like at a bris mila, like at a chuppah, you know, when you do birchas erisin, like at whenever you're associating it with some other mitzvah that you're doing, like at kiddush, right? Where is the placement of that bar priyagafen?
First one.
It's always the first one, and yet in every Haggadah we have a bracha v'ashar galanu followed by bar priyagafen. That's what it says in every Haggadah. L'chora, it's backwards, right? L'chora, it should really be a bar priyagafen before. So Rav Shechter made that ha'ara. He says, I do what it says in the Haggadah, but it's a good kasha why I do what it says in the Haggadah, right? Meaning, it's a kasha why that should be the case. Now, another halachic, more questions, or, yeah?
Is there a problem with putting red wine into white wine for
Kaleah? So they say you should put white wine into red wine. So that you've mekra din ein tzviya ba'ochlin, but when it's kavanoso is when your kavan is only for the color, because so then it's it could be a problem. So they say you should put white wine into red wine as opposed to red wine into white wine.
Do we, I guess, aside from what you're going to say, the first two cups, how quickly do you need to drink the rov kos? Is there like a time
Of drinking Rovkos? I don't know how quickly you have to drink it. I don't know.
Meaning you just need to have Rovkos within a quick amount of time?
Meaning the shear of Kadesh Tiyas Revius is Lagave Bracha Achrona. Otherwise, you just drink the Kosos, probably with before you talk. Before
meaning
you
someone has like a really fancy bottle of wine,
they
want
to savor it.
They want to savor it.
Yeah, so you drink, that's probably even Kadesh Tiyah for that. That would be totally in the issue about hot tea, right? How you measure Kadesh Tiyah's Revius of something that is drunk in a way that's slower than you would drink a cup of soda, right? That's a good kasha. Yeah.
Do you drink water to eat on Erev Pesach after someone if it enables a person to have alcohol? In other words, usually alcohol and alcohol is a bad idea.
Oh. So. I don't know about that because there are halachas about not eating. So, yeah.
But meaning usually, nowadays, Muslims don't get to the mitzvah matzah
until much later. Yeah, but afal pikein, we do what it says in Shulchan Aruch. I think we try. Now, if a woman said shechianu at candle lighting, it's not possible that she should answer amen to shechianu at kiddush. You know, some families have the minhag where everybody says kiddush together. That's my family's minhag, where it's not just the person leading the Seder. And the basis of that minhag is because they want everyone to say the word Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, you know, that night, that everyone should say it themselves. So my family minhag is that everyone says the Kiddush. So if everyone is saying the Kiddush together, the women who already lit candles and said Shechianu at candle lighting should not say Shechianu at the Kiddush. If they're saying Shechianu at the Kiddush, no, what's the problem? It's a hefsek between their bar priyagafen and when they're drinking, and it's a bracha levatala. A lot of bracha levatala opportunities on the night of the Seder. If you want to win a bracha levatala contest, you can just do what it says in the Haggadah and you'll win. You know, so a woman should not say shachianu again at the kiddush, and it's not even so pashut that if the husband says the kiddush and she answers amen to the shachianu, that's okay. Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he's mekel that he says that she's allowed to answer amen because as long as the person saying the kiddush, the shachianu is appropriate, so it all becomes part of the kiddush and she's attaching herself to that kiddush. So that's what Rav Moshe has. Rav Shechter told us that when he got married, he told his wife, this is one of those things both Rav Shechter and Rav Reisman speak about a lot. How is that? They both speak about this a lot. Rav Reisman said when he got married, he instructed his wife not to answer amen to the shechianu that he says at the kiddush. Rav Shech says when he got married, he told his wife not to say shechianu when she lights candles. And his svara was better to say shechianu at kiddush than when you light candles, because shechianu ala kos is a more chashuv a shechianu. So why would you take away the opportunity to say a shechianu ala kos when you're going to say it one time or the other? Might as well say it ala kos rather than when you light candles. But everyone agrees that you can't do it both times, right? And if you do it both times, that's a problem. But again, Ramosha has that kula that if she's not saying kiddush and he's saying kiddush, even though she already said shechianu, Ramosha's mekel that she's allowed to answer that shechianu. Rabbi Reisman said that during COVID he lost his sense of smell, so he couldn't say the bracha on besamim at Avdala. So he would have one of the bachrim that live in his house say the bracha on besamim during the Havdala. He said that based on he mentioned in the shir that based on Ramesha he can answer amen to that bracha even though that bracha is not shaykh to him, he's allowed to answer. I made that bracha right in the middle of his havdalah. So he said, someone told Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky that he had said that, and Rav Shmuel sent him a message that he's wrong. Rav Shmuel said that Rav Moshe is when you're the one that's saying the Kiddush, and you're the person saying the Kiddush is saying a bracha that's shaykh to him, so then someone else who's also being Yotze can answer amen even to the brachas that aren't shaykh to them. But Rav Moshe never would have said that if the person saying the Havdalah has a bracha that he can't say, that when someone else says that bracha, that he can answer amen to that. That Rav Shmuel thought was different. Not sure what the chilek, why that should be a chilek, but that's what Rav Shmuel thought that it would be different. Okay, Shir Kazayas of Matzah. Ooh, we're going to run out of time. We're out of time almost, but Shir Kazayas of Matzah depends on the thickness of the matzah, and it could vary greatly. if you are having the Sfardi matzahs, the thicker Sfardi soft matzahs, so Shir Kazayis is pretty small. It's not such a, because obviously it's much, much thicker. If you're having the Charedim matzahs, you have to eat like a whole box, to get a Shir Kazayis, right? I mean, people often say it's easiest to express things in terms of, they say that the size of your palm or the size of your palm with your fingers or whatever, or one third of a matzah or one quarter of a matzah, everyone has their own shear that they give. Those numbers don't really make sense in the sense that it's not universal. It really depends what kind of matzah you're having. On an average size hand shmura matzah, Rav Shechter was making that it's like 3 by 3 inches, very, very small shear kazayas. Rabbi Reisman was much more machmir. He thought that a third of a matzah is kazayas, because he said, yeah, because a third of a matzah is a jumbo egg. Rav Shechter says a jumbo egg is not a, and he's being machmir for the tzlach, right? The tzlach holds that the shir kazayis is the size of a current beitza, and a current beitza is a jumbo egg. Mehechitesi, a current beitza is a jumbo egg, and mehechitesi, you have to be machmir for that tzlach, right? So so for daraisa, you understand that people want to be a little more machmir on the shir. So for that first kazayis that you're going to have, it's kedai to be a little more machmir on the shir of matzah. But on the first kazayis, there's another chumrah that people have two kazaisim, right? One kazayis from the lechem mishnah matzah, and one kazayis from the prusa, right? That you're using. L'chora, that chumrah of two kazaisim only makes sense if you're eating from each of those matzahs. If you're just grabbing another matzah, to be mashlim, l'chora, that the chumrah doesn't make sense. The whole idea of the chumrah is that you should have a kazayis from the lechem mishnah, which is the top and the bottom matzah, and a kazayis of the prusa, because madarko shalani beprusa. So that's what it is. But if you're going to be machmir to have two kazayisim, then you don't need to be machmir in the shir kazayis on top of that, but your two kazayisim will be one kazayis, meaning will be one chumradika kazayis, and which is the real din daraisa anyway. So the only reason to be machmir is because it's daraisa. So once you're on to your second kazayis, it's not a daraisa. Am I making sense? Am I being clear? Yeah? Okay.
If you know you're going to need to be mashing from other matzahs, does it make sense to already be holding them while you're making the
bracha? Probably. Probably makes sense to have your own lechem mishnah if you can. Yeah. Okay, there's so many. Should we stop? Should we keep going? Yeah.
Should the person make sure not to talk until he's sure that he's had his eyes?
You should probably not talk until after Korech, right? Not main yonah de matzah, at least. You shouldn't talk. People with gluten allergies and things like that, wheat matzah is obviously the best. For those who are gluten-free, they're spelt with some gluten that has some amount of gluten. Oat matzah that has no gluten. Problem with oat matzah is that it's not so pasha that shibol ha-shul is actually oats. Rav Shach says that if you use oat matzah, don't say birch ha-mitzvah in it. Answer amen, someone else's bracha. It's always an easy way out. If there are other people at the table that are going to say brachas mitzvah, so why would you risk a bracha levatala? Again, another bracha levatala. That should be the title of the shiur, right? How to maximize brachas levatala during the seder. Right, so if you're eating oat matzahs, if it's not one of the chamesh minei dagan, it's a bracha levatala to say an alachilas matzah. So better to listen to somebody else. The Rav Shechter points out that even though oats probably are not one of the chameshes minei dagan, oats have been growing near wheat for so many years that already took on so many of the characteristics of wheat, and therefore they're good for matzah. However, celiacs often will only buy really purebred oats that are not that don't grow near wheat and that do not have it, because then it defeats the purpose otherwise. So, okay. Rav Shechter often points out that halal should be recited responsively, just like you do in shul. The responsive part should be done responsively, even around the Seder table. Rav Shechter also often points out that you should, everyone should have the same nusach of the Haggadah in front of them, because the nusach Sfarad and the nusach Ashkenaz Haggadahs are different. So you want to have the same nusach of the Haggadah in front of you, so everybody's, on the same page in a literal sense. Rav Shechter is also very makbid that at the end of the Seder, when it comes to the Kol Shel Eliyahu, in a lot of families, they pretend. that Eliyahu HaNavi is coming, and they knock on the table and say, oh, get the door now, because Eliyahu is here, and they should spill out a little wine from the coast. Look, Eliyahu took a drink. Rav Schachter is, you know, he's an easygoing person, right? He's not someone who gets too agitated about things. It's always like, you know, whatever happens, okay, you know, he's like, he does not like this at all. He thinks that that lying to children on the night of the Seder is the worst thing you could do. He said, our whole religion is based on the fact that our parents tell us the truth. We don't have an Easter bunny. We don't have a Santa Claus. We have our parents tell us the truth, that there was a Yetzias Mitzrayim, there was a Maimon Har Sinai, there was Esar Makos, there were Nevi'im, that all of that is truth. And the whole Masorah of our religion is based on that premise, that our parents tell us the truth. So on the night that you're passing on that Masorah to your children, you need to be very truthful to your children. I have a big taiva to keep going. I know people have to go, so should... all right. People have to go. Should we do like that? Yeah. Okay. People have to go. And we'll just whoever doesn't have to go, we'll stick around for a little longer. A chakash v'sameach to whoever has to go. And there's contemporary halacha today. What's the topic? Chalamoi. That's a very important topic. Okay. That's like, that picks up where this year leaves off, right? Chalamoi. Yeah. So, all right. So let's. What's that? Okay, good, good. All right. I'm still recording. I'll see you. I'm still recording. It's good. Okay, so just a few more things that I just wanted to get out there. Women are chayavos in the midst of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's not like davening where you don't have to understand it and you can just say that. I'm just joking. You're supposed to understand davening also. But you're supposed to understand the words of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, otherwise you're not really being Masafer Yetzias Mitzrayim. So a lot of times people just daven up, you know, the psukim parts, you know, that's which is like the whole thing, right? So, don't worry, they understand the story of Reb Elazar ben Azariah saying that he was Kiven Shev M'Shana. They understand the story in B'nai Brak. Those are all introductory paragraphs. You got to understand the actual Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Rabbeinu Eliyahu was a Bala Tosos who lived in London, and he said that if the women and the children don't understand Hebrew, say the Haggadah in English. So that he actually, Rav Schachter loves to point out that he actually uses that example of English because he lived in London, so it was English. You know, it wasn't any other language. If you don't understand what you're saying, then you're not Yotzei the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's a good thing there's no bracha on the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Otherwise, it would be a bracha levatala for those people who don't understand what they're saying. It's also important to point out that there's still a mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov on Pesach also. So as much as people are exhausted and there's a lot of work that goes into making Pesach, and there are a lot of requirements, a lot of halachic requirements, we have to be careful that not detract from our simcha. I was very moved by the kasha of the Maisa Hashem that we learned yesterday when he asked on that story of all these Tanaim staying up all night in Bnei Brak. His big kasha was, it's usher to stay up all night if it's going to detract from your Simchas Yom Tov. He had a mahalich, why it was okay, but one needs to be mindful of Simchas Yom Tov as well. So one should experience Simchas Yom Tov. Another very important point to make is that one should finish the Seder by Chatzos. If you're running late, so there's a Tanai of the Avnei Nezer that some people rely on with the Afikomen, that if you see that you're not going to get to the Afikomen by Chatzos, so the Avnei Nezer holds that you can make a Tanai. That if we really paskin that you need to eat the Afikomen by Chatzos, so I'm going to have a Gzayis HaMatzah right now for that Afikomen. And then I'll be allowed to eat after Chatzos, because Mistama, Ein Maftirin Achar Pesach Afikomen, means Kol Zman, that I can still be Mekayim the Mitzvah. But once the Mitzvah's over, so then I'm allowed to eat afterwards. And if you hold that it's Kol HaLaila, so then I'll be fine eating the Afikomen later anyway. Right? So that's the Tanai of the Avnei Nezer. It's a very questionable Tanai, because Mehechi Tesi, that if you hold that you need to eat the Afikomen by Chatzos, Mehechi Tesi, that means that the Ein Maftirin also runs out of Chatzos. Maybe the Ein Maftirin goes all night, right? Maybe the halacha that you're not allowed of other food goes all night. So it's not a glut Avni Nezer. It's not one that everyone necessarily agrees to, but Rav Pam writes in one of the Rav Pam on the festivals or something, it says that he thought it was worthwhile for people to keep that Avni Nezer in their back pocket if their wife worked hard preparing a Suda, that they shouldn't, she's slaving in the kitchen for weeks preparing Suda's Yantiv, and then he says, no, we don't have time for Shulchan Aruch, we're full anyway from the, from Korech. It's just like, that's not Derech Eretz. So, right, it's Machlokas Tanoim, whether the din to finish Karban Pesach before midnight is a din to Rabbanan or a din to Oraisa. I spoke about this yesterday in the Temen Halacha. If it's to Oraisa, it's based on Vachlas Abasa Balayla Azeh, and the term Balayla Azeh is used by Makas Bechoro, so we assume that both happened before Chatzos. However, Rabbi Akiva disagreed. He thought that Minat Torah, you can eat Karban Pesach until Alos HaShachar, but it's very hard to know when Alos HaShachar is, because it was still very dark outside, and they didn't have clocks, they didn't have watches, so people would end up eating after Alos HaShachar, which could be an Isser Kares of eating Nosar, and that's terrible, right? Midrabanan, we finish by Chatzos. I mean, you all tonight agree you finish by Chatzos. Question is, Midrabanan, Midaraisa, but for Karban Pesach. Question is, Midrabanan or Midaraisa, right? If it's a din Midrabanan, it's because we're afraid that you're going to violate eating Karban Pesach after Alos HaShachar, which is a violation of an Isser Nosar, of a Los HaSei in the Torah. And Chazal Arasu Mishmeres L'Mishmarti, Rav Shachter points out, Limishmarti means he shamer pen al los asays. Chazal are supposed to make gzeros on los asays. But on mitzvah asay, they don't have to make gzeros. So therefore, the Gemara says the nafkamina between whether it's a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabanan is whether you have to finish the afikomen by chatzos. If the din of chatzos is only midrabanan, so they'll make a gzera when the risk is no sar, they'll make a gzera. But by eating matzah late, the risk is just a bitl asay. It's not a los asay. So it will mean that you haven't eaten your matzah in time. So it's a bitul asay, but it's not a losa. They would never make such a gezeirah. So then you have all night to eat matzah. But if it were a doraisa that you have to have Karban Pesach by Chatzos, so then the same would be true of all the mitzvahs halayla. So how do we paskin? So Tosfos isn't sure how we paskin. Normally we hold like Rabbi Akiva, but there's a Mishnah, Nezu Makoman, that sounds a lot more like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, so we try to move along the meal as quickly as possible to finish the Avikoman, and to really have all four kosos by Chatzos, because that's part of the mitzvah salayla. So Rav Shachter always says that when his kids were little, and Rav Shai has confirmed this, they always thought that they were the least religious family in the neighborhood, because everyone would come and say, we finished our Seder at 2, we finished at 3, we finished next Tuesday, we finished, you know, and he'd be like, oh, we finished by Chatzos, you know, and my non-religious father just sat there with a Gemara the rest of the night at the table, you know, like, so it turns out that they were actually more religious. that's the ending of the story. But they say, Rav Shachter pointed out, they say that Rav Shlomo Zalman would try to finish by Chatzos, but he wouldn't cut out one of the courses that his wife had prepared in order to finish at Chatzos, because Meikar Adin, it's not required by anything except for Karban Pesach. So since Meikar Adin, it's really only Adin and Karban Pesach, and not by Matzah even really, so he didn't want to hurt his wife's feelings. Another point, Elio Anavi does not come to your Seder. Sorry to break that to you. It's called Koshel Eliyahu probably because it's connected the fifth Lashon of Geula of the Hevesi, so it's the coast that represents that which will happen when Eliyahu HaNavi comes to herald the Geula. There's a mitzvah, the Gad Televincha, about Yitzias Mitzrayim, and there's a mitzvah to tell the story of Maimon Har Sinai, and it says that Vadat Levinach Levinach Yom Hashem Matul Tnei Hashem. So the validity and the truth of our religion is based on those historical events, and we have to believe that our parents told us the truth, and therefore it's very important that we tell our children the truth. The Ran writes in the Drushas, that in Drush Gimel, that Moshe Rabbeinu was dafka, someone who's kvad peh, kvad lashon, so that no one could say that, oh, he was just such a charismatic person. He managed to capture everyone's imagination and convince them that they saw something that they didn't see. The Ran writes, Moshe Rabbeinu was the worst speaker in the world. And yet, when he had a nevuah, when it was the Shechina Medaberes Mitoch Grono, it was, everything came out perfectly crystal clear. And we believe that all of those things really happened, and that gave people emuna in Moshe Emes V'Sorasso Emes. That was the highest level of nevuah that Moshe Rabbeinu had. So it's very, very important that all of the Ikarei Amuna are highlighted at the Seder night. So in Shulchan Aruch and Simen Tov Ayin Beis Sif Aleph, it says that you should start the Seder as soon as possible. In Shulchan Aruch, we accept the Shita of the Balei Tosfos that we don't say Kiddush until Tzeis HaKochavim, so as soon as possible after Tzeis HaKochavim. But Rav Shachter points out, you don't have to have the most machmir shita on Tzeis HaKochavim. This time of year in New York, 30 minutes after Shkia, is Tzeis HaKochavim. So starting the Seder means really starting. Everyone's kittel should be by their seat so they have it ready for them. Everyone's pillow should be by their seat. Everyone should know exactly what kind of wine. Whatever you can prepare during the day in advance so that, you know, when Tzeis HaKochavim hits, I find, you know, that makes it so much easier to finish. The people that have trouble finishing by the Afikomen or the Dalei Kosos by Chatzos, typically it's not because they're saying so much marvelous Saper B'Tzios Mitzrayim. It's because they spent an hour getting their act together to say Kiddush in the first place. If you mamish, get it going, like right away, then you'll have no problem finishing by Chatzos, typically. In a nursing home, they have a problem because in nursing homes, they can't start the Seder after Tzeis HaKochavim because all the residents are going to be sleeping. So they rely on the minority opinion that you could say Kiddush after Plag. And then Rav Shachter points out, then they say Nirtza, and, you know, like things that don't really matter. And then once Tzeis HaKochavim hits, that's when they have the matzah and the marah, whatever, if they could do that so everyone could be in bed by 9 o'clock. It's important for young children also that, you know, to keep kids up, that you start on time. Last thing, the Mishnah says that we conclude with Birchas Hashir. The Gemara has two opinions as to what that is. So there were two minhagim for many centuries. It's similar to how the Mishnah says that Maschil Begnusu Masayim B'Shavach, right? So we have Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. What does that mean? Does it mean Mitchil Avdei Avodah Zarah? Does it mean Avad Mayinu? So Rav Shachter points out that the Me'iri says that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Davka calls one of the Avos Nezikin by the name of Maveh. Right? Why didn't he just call it? So we have a whole machlokes. Is it Adam or is it Shane? Those are two perfectly good words. If he meant Adam, why not say Adam? If he meant Shane, why not say Shane? What, he comes up with this weird word, Maveh. So the Me'iri says, because there were already two traditions of which of the Avos, of whether the fourth Av Nezikin is Maveh, is Adam or Shane. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi came up with a word that, based on Psukim Tanakh, encapsulates both. Both traditions are incorporated. So Rav Shachter pointed out that the same is probably true with Maschil Begnusu Masayim B'Shavach, that they're both traditions. They're both true traditions. So we say, instead of saying Maschil B'Avad Mayinu Masayim, no, we say Maschil Begnusu Masayim B'Shavach, and that encapsulates both traditions. So because they were both very old minhagim, and Rabbi incorporated both with that one phrase. So Rav Shachter said the same is true with Birchas Hashir. Birchas Hashir could mean Nishmas Kol Chai, or it could mean Yahalulucha at the end of Hallel, right? How is it that you conclude with Birchas Hashir? Do you conclude with Nishmas Kol Chai, or do you conclude with the Yahalulucha at the end of Hallel? So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote this vague expression to include both of the traditions, and we try to follow both. So if you have a Nusach Sfarad HaGadah, though, it's a little different than a Nusach Ashkenaz. So like Rav Shachter always said, better to have everyone on the same page. Ashkenaz has Hallel and Yahalulucha until Melech Melech B'Tish B'Chos, but not including the last line. Then Kilo Chazdo, then Nishmas Kol Chai through Yishtabach. Nusach Sfar doesn't say Yahalulucha after Hallel, and only after Yishtabach they say Yahalulucha. So every home should figure out which tradition they want to follow. See which Haggadah most of the people around the table, which Nusach of the Haggadah they have, and try to make sure that everyone conforms to the same thing. You shouldn't have losses go to do around your table when everyone's part of the same family doing the same Seder. Okay, everyone should have a Chag Kasher to Sameach.